Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Half Hour Call from Open Drama. And this month, we have in the very fortunate position to be talking to the amazing Sam Marsden, who has got two new books out from her collection of, and it's a widening collection, isn't it, Sam, of books that are really user-friendly, and that the kind of thing that every drama teacher should have on their shelves for those mornings when you just can't think of anything to do. And Sam's books are really clear and really straightforward, but I might be preempting the conversation a little bit. So, Sam, hello. And
Hello, Ali. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
you'd already produced two books. It is two, isn't it, that I remember? For looking at, activities for drama teachers and English teachers in the classroom. And you've now kind of gone in two different directions with the new ones. Do you want to tell me a little bit about the thinking behind going quite so young? Because one of them is aimed at the 4 to 7 year old age group, which I think is great, but it's not the usual field that you get these kind of books in. So what was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, that's right. So I wrote drama games for early years, brackets 4 to 7 year olds, and I've taught that age group for about 10, 11 years. And it's a really difficult age group to teach. I taught for Stagecoach. I was their early years teacher. And the headmistress there was always like, oh God, it's really hard to find early years teachers because there is a knack to it. They're quite difficult to teach, but once you crack the code, they're so rewarding. They've got these amazing imaginations. And I mean, it's funny when you go to drama school, they're teaching you to get back into that mindset of a 4, 5, 6 year old, that kind of having no inhibitions and just saying yes and just kind of going for it. And they're so sweet. I mean, you like go on journeys with them and you might play like a simple game, like, yes, let's, the classic drama game. And they will fully, full-heartedly believe it. You'll say, let's all be gorillas, and off they go, and they're feeling it and they're believing it. So I really wanted to share what I'd learned over my 10 years of working with early years. And no, there isn't much on the market for it. There is something, but I don't really feel like it's quite difficult and above what they're capable of, I find. So I wanted it to be a simple book that anybody, a nursery school teacher, a preschool teacher, could pick up and say, do you know what? I'm going to try drama with my class. It's not necessarily for a drama teacher, although it's good for them too. And I've had a couple of early years teachers actually from Stagecoach reach out to me and be like, oh my God, this book is like a godsend. Thank you so thank you so much, because they so often, and I did when I first started teaching early years, you try with the slightly more difficult games and then you're like, well, why aren't they getting it? Why don't they understand? Why are they losing attention spans? And it's because you have to bring it right back and make it really simple and story-based and music-based for them.
Because when you get them, that's I completely get what you're talking about, because there is this incredible imagination which has two effects really. One is it's really great to work with them on what's essentially structured imaginative play, which is so healthy. But on the other hand, because their imaginations are so free, they will go off at tangents and individual things, and they'll wander away from where you're going, and they'll try and create new rules for things that you're trying to achieve. And you're thinking, I don't know how to contain this. But when it all comes together, it's thrilling.
Yeah, it is. You just said a phrase that was really good. Was it structured imaginative?
Play.
Yeah, structured imaginative play. And that I haven't heard that phrase before, but that's exactly the phrase that it is. And yeah, containing it is a thing. And I think anyone who's worked with early years has had that lesson where you're like, oh boy, I went too far. Then you're like,
And then it's the case of getting them to climb back down from the walls and getting them back to where you were.
yeah, you send them back to their parents completely wired, and they're like, great, thanks. But no, I've learned like, oh yeah, by about year three, I cracked it. It took a while though. And then I'd end up training. I've trained quite a lot of early years teachers, kind of how to deal with that age group, and they do need structure. And you do need those boundaries. Like, I'll always, the first thing I'll do for any early years class is signal for silence, and I'll make sure every child understands it, and I'll remind them every lesson. And I find repetition for that age group. And just, you need to just be very clear and very simple, because as soon as they start feeling confused, they're likely to start playing up and not focusing. So.
You see, I think all the things you've just said are actually true of all drama classrooms. I think the need to be clear about your boundaries, the thing about getting a signal for silence, I think all of that applies just as likely if you're dealing with 25-year-olds than if you're dealing with 5-year-olds, because what's where the best work comes from is to do with what comes out of a feeling of being safe and knowing where you stand, whether or not you're 4 or whether or not you're 14, I think is really important. And I think sort of the guidelines that you're suggesting at the beginning of the 4 to 7 book are a lesson to us all. I think they're a reminder of the importance of that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And having those boundaries and those structures are what provide the safe space. And when I see new teachers going into it, they're lovely and they're very excited and all the rest of it. But one of the things I notice they're lacking is the boundaries and the strictness. And, we can all remember that drama class when we were younger as teenagers that gets out of control. And, I think I remember saying when I was 14 years old or whatever to my drama teacher at school, like, oh, miss, I want to focus, I want to do the work. And then you've got loads of people dossing about, not taking the subject seriously. And you're frustrated because you want to be doing the drama work. So you do need your teacher to be making sure that everybody is doing the work and they're not messing around, but at the same time, creating a space safe enough that you can explore and you can improvise, and it's a balance.
You've divided the book up into sections. Do you have a favourite thing that you do with these groups? Because you've got these different sections in the book about, your warm-ups and your different activities. Is there a bit that you like doing the best that you think, oh, I'm going to get onto the story bit now, or I'm going to get onto the, or do you just like playing the game?
Yeah, no, the games have their place and the games are fine and they can be good fun. But no, my favourite stuff is the creating stuff with the students. So creating the stories with them, creating the improvisations with them, because it's always different and it always changes. So I like feeding off the class and then kind of working together. Also, music is my favourite. So in the book, all of the books, the improv book, the early years book, the creative writing book, I've added QR codes, which you can just get your phone and you get a Spotify playlist. So any with a QR code is my favorite, because I just find music just opens something up for the students. It kind of gives them permission to go a little bit deeper. So yeah, any of the exercises with music, I look forward to.
Yeah, I love the QR codes, by the way. I was sitting here playing with my playlist while
Oh,
because
thank
I
you.
mean, I think it's one of those things that you, as a as somebody who works creatively in drama, I think the thing that you do accumulate playlists. I have on my I was going through it the other day, and on my Spotify playlist, I've got things that are labeled with play titles where I've worked on something and the music has been part of it, either because it's been used in the show or because we used it for warm-ups, because it really does set the tone. And I think when there's less vocabulary, when they're a bit more non-verbal as they are when they're younger, that the music, they respond to music really quickly.
They really do. And it's a quick way to access feelings. I mean, I have a friend who's an actor, and he says whenever he always has a playlist for his character, just before he's about to perform on set. And he listens to his playlist. Now, I know a lot of actors use music to access feelings and access stuff, and I think it's great for drama teachers to help their
Yeah,
students.
I mean, I know a couple of playwrights who do the same thing, and at least one novelist who has a playlist when they're writing, and it's going on while they're working,
Yeah.
because it's about being able to step into that world, and that's kind of what we're doing, isn't it? It's a world building exercise. Which kind of takes me very smoothly. Don't look at that for a segue. onto the other book, which is your acting exercises for creative writing, which includes a section on building a world. Where did that come from? I mean, that you told me about the early years, and your experience with working for State with Stagecoach and the younger groups there. Where's the creative writing element come from?
Yeah, well, that's my personal little passion and hobby. So I do creative writing in my free time, and I write novels. I've been kind of just in my personal time for quite some years reading kind of script writing structure books, novel structure writing books, kind of every book about novel writing I've read and have written a novel. And I do have an agent, a literary agent in the UK for my novel, and it did get optioned for film and TV as well. So
Exciting.
So like it's kind of my job as well, fiction writing. And I was like, oh, wouldn't it be amazing if I could combine my fiction writing and drama teaching passions together? And I had all these ideas of kind of how we could make the fiction writing more practical with drama. And I just feel so passionately that if English teachers could do this, I feel like it could really open up students' imaginations for writing fiction if you get into it through acting. So I mean Charles Dickens famously acted out all his characters. I love imagining him sat there and like pretending to be Miss Havisham or something like and it a lot of I think acting and writing are actually very, very similar. You're getting into the shoes of a character, and I think the two work together beautifully, and there's nothing else out there that I've seen that combines the two. So that's kind of how that one came about.
Because it's really interesting because I mean I do a lot of creative writing, but all of mine is drama based, and I do a lot of work with adults in that area. And what's really interesting is reading your book. I'm thinking I could do that with that group because it's even though you're saying it's for 8+, the idea of a game that gets people into it, because of course the biggest barrier I think to creative writing, and I think it's very true for younger students, is I don't know what to write. And if you distract them, I suppose is what you're doing by playing games. So, and then suddenly they find themselves writing, then that's come out of that activity, they've got something to base it on. And I think all of your exercises are very much kind of in that ballpark, is they're leading them to a point when they can go, oh, I do have something to write, I do have something to say.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so I, like we all did, I had to homeschool my son during COVID, and I was a bit like, ah, what do I teach him? And I kind of wanted to get him into writing, just for something to do during that terrible time when we were all stuck inside. But he was like, I don't know what to write, da, 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 da. And so then I was like, started playing like drama games, and then I was like, and then we came up with a character in the drama game, and then I was like, write that. And then he was like, yeah. And like off he went. And I was like, woohoo, job done. It's just such a fun way to get people writing, like just staring at the blank page, just the cursor moving. You're just kind of like, I don't know what to do. You know, like when we're sat in a circle and it's an improvisation activity and you're sat there going, I don't know what idea to do. But then all of a sudden, if you play a drama game and it just unleashes something. You're connecting with your intuition and you surprise yourself. This idea comes out and you're like, oh, I didn't know I had that in me. And off they go. So yeah. And the creative writing book says 8+, but really it is aimed at adults just as much as it's aimed at teenagers. And I had an email from a script writing tutor in London last week, and he was like, oh yeah, I've been using these in my like adult evening class. And my script writing teachings really like got loads, like the class are loving it. So I was like, yes.
Do you think it's something, though, that's missing from the drama curriculum? I mean, if you are doing GCSE or A level, then you're being, we're talking about older students now, you're being expected to do devising work, but you're not encouraged to do script writing. You're not encouraged to create your own scripts. Do you think that's a loss?
Huge loss. And I mean, devising and script writing are basically the same thing anyway. But okay, just from a personal perspective, I would way rather sit down and write a script than try and devise with a group of people, right? I mean, it'd be fantastic if script writing could be added into the curriculum for GCSE and A level.
As it seems to me that one of the things that happens in, I think about kind of the devising sessions that I do when I'm working with young people towards, and we're talking about exams, let's face it, that they come up with all these brilliant ideas and it's all talked about and they try stuff out, but because they don't have any script writing skills because it's not encouraged, they don't know how to structure it. So you get these wonderful rambling pieces that kind of go on for 3 hours, that never quite get to the point, but have these little nuggets of wonderful dialogue in them or wonderful moments of coup d'état, and they kind of just they're buried underneath all of this because I don't think that they have the structure or the understanding. And I just wonder what your thoughts were on that. That's why I asked.
Yeah, I mean, structure is so important when it comes to writing. And every book that's ever had any success has structure to it. It just does. And the author or script writer, whoever it is, will have learned the nuts and bolts. And the nuts and bolts are fascinating. Like, and they really don't even take that long to teach. And teenagers are perfectly capable of learning it. And yeah, it will be great for them. For script writing, it'd be great for them for devising. But let's face it, like the world we're living in, you need to be able to tell a story. So if they end up getting a job as a social media manager at some car company or whatever, they need to know how to tell a story and they need to know the structure of telling a story. So I really believe that teaching them story making, storytelling skills can help them with so many jobs. I mean, you know, politicians, like all of them. We all need to. Yeah,
Yeah, maybe we better not go anywhere near the idea that politicians are storytellers, because that implies a fictional element that perhaps we're not aiming for.
Yes.
I think one of the things that I always find fascinating, though, about the kind of activities that you're talking about in the book is it moves away from. Oh, I mean, do you ever read those interviews with people who are writers who say, "Yes, well, I get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and I have my breakfast, then I sit down at my laptop or my typewriter and I will write for 3 hours, and then I will have my lunch, and then I will take the dog for a walk," and I just think I can't do that. If I sit in front of my laptop at 9 o'clock in the morning and I'm going to be there for 3 hours, I'm not actually necessarily going to produce anything that's really good because I haven't got any starting point. I've got a blank screen. I might even have an idea, but what I need is somebody to kick start that conversation. It's one of the reasons why I like working with writers groups and why I like doing it with groups of people, because those conversations can be really, they're not necessarily inspiring each other. We're not working together so much. It's about hearing other voices, I think. And I think for drama, that's really important. Are your exercises also considering the idea of young people having a voice? We don't really hear enough from them as a rule.
Well, I mean, that's my whole passion with all of it, with the drama teaching, with the writing fiction, all of it is, empowering people to find their voice. And to connect with themselves and connect with their creativity, their intuition, and then, yeah, to have a voice. And, the most rewarding thing that I know every drama teacher will ever say, and we've all seen it many times, are the students who don't talk much, who are quiet at school, who don't reach out, who don't connect. And then all of a sudden, a couple of months into drama, they'll suddenly connect with a character, or they'll connect with an improvisation. There'll be some emotional connection, and they'll suddenly just come out of their shell. And then you hear, and they'll stay out of their shell, and they'll be being heard in drama. They'll be being seen in drama. And they'll be like, "Well, hang on a minute, I'm actually quite good at this. I'm actually quite funny," or like, "People are actually listening to me." And then you hear it from the, maybe the parents if they pay any interest, but or from other teachers, and they say, "Oh, there's been a change in blah blah," and they're the students that, get us drama teachers up in the morning, and why we keep going, I guess.
They are very often the students who maybe that they don't come up with it, but they're the ones you run into in Tesco's who go, "Oh, miss, do you remember when I did blah? Do you remember that lesson we did where you made me do X?" And you think, "Yeah, I do actually." But it means so much more to them than it kind of does to you because it was a turning point. And I think that's one of the joys.
And I think, a lot of people who are drama teachers might have sometimes been that kid who had something like that happen. Like, I know for me, I was the quiet, the shy one that wasn't really talking, and then all of a sudden, you just find this inspirational, wonderful drama teacher who sees you and hears you, and you're like, "Oh wow, like I'm actually a human." And you suddenly come out of yourself, and your gratitude for that person that saw you is just huge. And then, I think later in life you want to give that back to people.
Mentioned earlier that you'd done a lot of work with Stagecoach. I mean, Stagecoach is very much in the kind of extracurricular zone. How do you feel about that access for young people? Because it can be quite controversial, I think, because
Oh,
obviously
yeah.
there are those of us who think, well, if it's that important, it should be in school, and that it shouldn't be for those people who can just pay for it.
So I obviously have a big problem with the Stagecoach fees. I can say that now, I don't work for them. I have a huge problem with the fees. It's inaccessible to most people. But yeah, I worked for them for 10 years because it was well paid. It actually, paid for my studies when I was on the drama and applied theatre course. I was there Monday to Friday doing my studies for applied theatre and teaching for Stagecoach Saturday and Sunday. And I wouldn't have been able to go to, university drama school without that. But how I justify, I wish it was in schools, but I really believe in extracurricular cheap drama, if that makes sense, like affordable extracurricular. So what I did, something like I went around schools, and it was, I mean, this was 7 years ago now, so with inflation, I probably have to charge a bit more, but I charged £3 per after school club, for an hour and a half, drama club after school. I did this in five schools, so Monday to Friday, and I did it for about 10 years. And if you charge £3, per student, and you have 20 in the class, it works out. And then I would give about five free places as well. And so a lot of the kind of parents were like, "Woohoo, £3 for an hour and a half of childcare, yes please." So they'd chuck their kid in the drama club even if the kid wasn't interested in drama. And then I would say to the teachers, like, "Do you have anyone who needs a free place? Like, I'll offer them that." So I found that was a really good way to make drama accessible. And then when I ran a youth theatre, I gave away about like 10% free places, but didn't charge much for the main fees. I would love to fight the government for more drama. I'm kind of trying a little bit, but it just feels a bit difficult. So, I love an extracurricular group that can give away some free places or provide cheap fees.
I think it is that thing. It there is a need and a desire out there. It's just finding the balance of providing it, between actually, I suppose, for someone in the position you're describing yourself in, and I know there's a lot of people out there who are in a very similar place, that you are essentially covering your costs, making a living, but also providing something that is in so many ways a really vital service to young people. And you know, it is those people that don't normally get access to extracurricular activities of any kind that I think is reaching out to them is the hardest thing of the lot.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to youth theatre kind of between the ages of 13 and 17, it wasn't something my family were willing to pay for. And, you know, it was just horrible. Like, you'd go, and I'd always say to the guy, like, who ran it, I'll bring my check next week. I'll bring my check next week, and beg my mum and dad, and they just wouldn't. And he just took me aside one day and just said, "Let's just forget about the check, shall we? It's okay. You don't need to." And I just remember just crying like happy tears, and he let me continue for like 4 or 5 years like that. And they went up to Edinburgh, and I couldn't afford the £400 or whatever it was back then to go up to Edinburgh with a show. And he was like, "Don't worry, you're still going to Edinburgh." Like, you know, it was, and just that act of kindness just sticks with you forever and makes you want to do that act of kindness for other people.
Because those are life-changing moments. You know, that they are the things that, you know, you are going to remember. I mean, it's obviously really kind of significant in your life. So I suppose the question is, what's next? So four drama books and a novel under your belt. What's going to happen next? What are you up to at the moment?
Well, I'm working on a musical, which is too much fun. So yeah, I'm working with there's a Ricky Allen. He did the musical Treason, which was a gunplot powder musical. He's a fantastic composer. I'm not doing the Treason one, but I'm doing a Medusa retelling with him. So I'm writing the script, and we're working on the lyrics together, and he writes the music on a Medusa retelling, which is fun and difficult. And yeah, I'm doing another drama teaching resource book at the moment, which I haven't got the title, but it'll be around drama games for mindfulness, drama games for kind of emotional well-being, something like that. And I want to add some kind of Alexandra technique and some kind of focus and mindfulness and into that. And then yeah, I'll be writing another novel as well, I think.
Okay, so not much then, really. So the how did the Medusa thing come about? How did you get into writing musicals?
Oh, well, I love musicals. I've always loved musicals. And oh no, it's going to sound so pretentious. I had a dream. And the whole musical came to me in a dream. And I woke up the next day and like wrote the whole outline out, and then kind of worked on the outline, and then sent the outline to some composers. And yeah, some composers said yes. And then I was like, "Oh God, I've got to write the script now." I have written the script 3 times, but I have got problems with the ending at the moment. I just haven't found the right ending. I don't know what to do.
And it was always a musical from the
It just was, I just dreamed it a musical.
get-go.
Like, when I say dream, I don't mean like I had a dream like Walt Disney. I mean literally, I went to bed and had like a dream when I was asleep and then woke
Oh,
up.
you've blown all my illusions now. I had this vision of you lying in bed and seeing the full Hamilton experience going on with, you know, singing and dancing and lighting and costume, and and that was how you spent your night.
No, I did. That did happen. I saw the whole show, but I was asleep.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the reason why you should always keep a notebook and pen by your bed.
Oh God, yeah, I couldn't go to sleep without a notebook and pen by my bed. Yeah.
I have one, and it's there for two reasons. One is because I dream up very often conversations, yeah, dialogue. I will be present when there are characters talking, and they'll come up with something really, really interesting. Because I'm currently writing a play about which is was inspired again inspired by a dream that is about being able to get advice from people who have gone away, either because they're dead or because they you've no contact with them anymore. And that was inspired by a dream. But the other thing that I do is this, 2 o'clock in the morning, waking up, going, "Oh, I haven't done," and so writing it down makes it me my brain shut up enough that I can go back to
Oh,
sleep.
yeah, that's a really interesting premise. Getting advice from people that you no longer have contact with.
Because I mean, there's all those people that you were that I started off because I was talking to somebody about university friends, and there's a couple of books on my shelf that were given to me by people I shared a house with when I was at university. And there's one of them, there's an inscription inside it which is relevant to something that was going on in my life at the time. And it that's what provoked the dream, I think. But the person who wrote it, I have no idea where he is now or what he's doing or anything like that. But at the time, he would have been the first person I would have gone to with certain problems. And just thinking about, then you get into that whole imaginative thing, don't you? You get into the whole, okay, so what if this character has a problem now that person back then would have been the person they would have asked? How would what would happen if they could get in touch with them? So that was where that's coming from. But you
I
know,
feel like you need a port. Sorry, I'm getting into, but like a portal. If there's like a, you have to go like through a portal, or that something has to happen for you to be able to contact that person, to be able to get through to that kind of other realm.
Do you there's a brilliant ja this may also be part of the background. There's a brilliant Japanese book which I recommend. It's a novel which I recommend to everybody. It's my go-to book at the moment. It's called Before the Coffee Gets Cold,
Okay, I'm writing that down.
and the premise is that you can go to this particular coffee shop and you can go back in t to time in some part of your life and speak to somebody. That moment, that life-changing moment. So, one of the ca characters in it wants to go back and tell somebody they love them. But they've only got the length of time before the coffee gets cold. So they've literally got to make their decision and do it then. They can't wait. They can't hesitate. It has to happen then. And it's beautiful. And some of it's happy and some of it's sad because, of course, some of it doesn't work out. It doesn't go the way that they wanted it to, because it was always the wrong decision kind of thing. It's fascinating. It's not very big, but can I recommend Japanese literature is my thing at the moment, so.
My favorite author is Japanese British, and I can't pronounce his name, but his book, which is Remains of the Day, and then he also did Never Let Me Go. But it's funny, it's slightly reminded me a bit when you just spoke of that book, because Remains of the Day is about not acting fast enough, just kind of letting things kind of go, and you need to do it there in the moment when things are present, which comes back to drama teaching, saying come into the present, come into the now, let's feel this now, let's do this now, let's not let the moment slip away.
That it's all about the interaction of people at that time. So it's about that moment.
Oh, I'm buying that book for sure.
Well, I say it's one of my big recommendations. I keep pushing books on people, and that's my one of my current passions. So if you were going to give somebody some advice about how to use your books, what would be your recommendations, your guide?
You can literally just pick them up and just open any page, and you've got something there ready for you. I mean, there are many different ways you can use it. So if you're an English or primary school teacher or kindergarten, preschool, or I keep speaking American lately, you can you can just pick it up and grab a game or two for 10 minutes, easy peasy. But you can actually make a whole proper workshop from it if you're a more specialized drama tutor, and you can make a 1 hour or even 2 hour workshop or even a whole day workshop out of the books. And I've structured them, all of them, in a way that, we kind of open up with kind of more warm-up stuff, and then we progress getting harder and harder, and then I have more chunky, meaty stuff as well, always in there towards the end. So yeah, you can kind of use them however you want to use them. I've tried to make them super clear. I have dyslexia and I get really stressed when things aren't clearly laid out. So I try to make them really clearly laid out for people.
So, can you tell me about a time when you've used one of these exercises and it's really flown, it's really taken off? Some a memory that you go kind of go, oh no, that was the time when that happened.
Oh yeah, one comes to my mind. I had a large class. I think they were like 6, 7 year olds, and we had a boy with autism in the group. And I was letting it was I think it was his fourth or fifth week, and I just said to him, you can just sit and watch, that's fine, like I'm not gonna force you to join in. And so he sat and he kind of watched very carefully for quite some weeks. And then I did the going on a journey exercise from the Drama for Early Years book. And I use a lot of teacher and role for that one. So, I'll say, like, we'll go on loads of different adventures. But for this one, it was we're going to the jungle. And I said, let's pack our bags. What are we going to bring? Put your hands up. Have you got any ideas? And they say, shorts, trainers, mosquito spray. And then I said, okay, and we're going to get on the plane. And then I become the air hostess and I grab a scarf and go, fire exits are here, here, and here. Everybody take your seats on the plane. And then this boy came and took his seat on the plane. And I
Oh.
was like, yes. But I didn't make a deal of it. I was like, let's carry on as the air hostess. And then I like went round like with the snacks, and I kind of went up to him and I was like, what would you like, sir, as your snack? And he kind of like went, what did he, oh, he went, Smarties. And I was like, here's your Smarties. And then he took it and he like ate a Smartie, and I was like, yes. And then we got off the plane and we got to Brazil and we were in the jungle, and I like my sound effects. So I pressed play and had like jungle sound effects, and I was like, okay, everybody put your sun cream on. And he put his sun cream on and we went around the jungle and we did the whole thing and got back on the plane and came back home, and he'd participated. And I was just like, but didn't make a deal of it. I was like, don't say anything. Like, just like act like this is normal. And then from that day, he just participated for a good couple of years after. And his mum just couldn't get over it. She was like, he's talking more, and like she just felt so happy that he became part of a group. And the group was so gorgeous with him, and it was beautiful.
I was just going to say, when we were talking earlier about imagination, I one of my experiences is I was working with a they were year four, and one of the things that I've been asked to do was to help them with they had to do a hygiene, personal hygiene. They were learning about how to use a toothbrush. So I've been asked to do this thing, but I don't know. So I created this story where I went in role into this class as as the queen, and I said, it was my birthday, and I knew that the king was going to make me this lovely birthday cake, and I was really looking forward to it. But he told me I couldn't eat it, and yes, I could unless I knew how to use this thing, and I didn't know what it was. And I got them to explain it to me. And then left them with the task, because it had to lead to some writing, that they had to write the Queen some instructions on how to use a toothbrush so that she could stick on her bathroom window, so that she pick it on her cabinet so that she would be able to follow the instructions. I went outside, took the crown off. I got this stupid plastic crown, and walked back into the room, and they all went, ah, you should have been here, the Queen was here. And I thought, just all I'd done was take, and it's that whole vivid imagination that for them, with the crown on, I was this person. The moment I took it off, I was back to being a teacher, and that person had gone, and they were just so happy and into it. And I've always kind of held that thing about, that's the power of the imagination, and that's the thing actually it's really great about working with the younger kids, because of course you get into secondary school and they're all too cool for that. You can't do that with secondary school kids. You have to kind of
No.
go, look, work with me here, work
Yeah.
with me. Whereas
Yes.
when they're, you know, 6, 7 years old, then they'll just roll with it because
Yeah.
that's the way they are.
Our teacher in role with kids is just the best, and they love it. They just fully go with it, and it just gives them permission to go for it too. And I think when the drama teacher goes for it, they go for it. And I love your story about the queen, and it's so empowering for them as well. And you've just turned what could potentially be quite a boring subject, personal hygiene, into an empowering exercise, something that's fun, something that's interactive, and something they're going to remember. Yeah. But yeah, secondary school, I find with secondary school age, I much prefer doing script work. You know, and improvisation too, but with children kind of under a 10-year-old, teacher in role, lots of imaginative, lots of devising, lots of going on play, lots of journeys, music, all the rest of it. And then with secondary school, I get a little bit more serious, a little bit more kind of character driven, a little bit more and writing. And I love it. It sounds like you're combining writing and drama together as well from
That's
what you
because I love it. I think that's one of the things about being a drama teacher, though, is that you bring yourself very much to the table. So if you're into that thing, then that's the thing the kids are going to end up experiencing. And you'll see somebody else working, you'll think, well, that's amazing, but I can't do that because that's not me.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in my position of being involved with open drama and other things that I do, I get to see an awful lot of other amazing teachers teach, and I will sit and I will think, well, that's astonishing, but I can't do that because that's not me.
Agree with this more. And you know, I sometimes get
It's
asked,
so personal, I think.
yeah, I sometimes get asked the question, you know, what do you tell teachers starting out and drama teachers starting out? And I just always say, connect to your own essence, connect to your own intuition and your own self, and bring yourself into the classroom. And that's how we get connection. When you're bringing a part of your soul in there and you're being honest and you're being authentic, the students are going to pick up on that. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of teachers are not. They're going in with a mask and they're not connecting. But if you go in open and in the moment with them and listening with them and creating with them and being yourself with them, it just creates magic.
I think it's just because it's so risky. I think that's the thing, is that if you go in and you are presenting some part of yourself, I think it's there is an inherent risk in that. You're opening yourself up to something. And I think in the current climate, I think that's you know, some people see that as dangerous. And it doesn't work across the board with all subjects. Yeah, there's no need for a maths teacher or the DT teacher to have to bring some of themselves into the classroom, although I think it's just as effective. But I think if you're involved in the arts, and you know, and I'm using that in its widest sense, I'm not talking just about drama. I think, you know, you have to be seen to be opening yourself up. And it seems the same as I think the other thing with arts teachers is you have to be seen to be doing it too.
Yes,
It's
you
one of the
do.
reasons why teacher in role works, because they're seeing you, in essence, acting, and creating and doing the things you're asking them to do. It's the same as, you know, you would expect an art teacher to be able to go, well, this is the art I make.
Yes.
And I think the bearing of the soul that way is kind of crucial.
Yeah.
So Yeah, it's been brilliant talking to you. Thank you very much for your time. And I also have to say a big personal thank you to you because Sam has very kindly given us some copies of the book for us to give away at our next CPD session at Lipper in Liverpool on the 21st of June for Illuminate North, which is our first foray into the northern area for doing one of our amazing Illuminate events. So if you haven't signed up for that, then that's your chance to get in there. And we're going to be giving away some of Sam's books like we did at Illuminate South in Southampton in January. So really looking forward to that. And again, thank you very much, Sam Marsden, for your time and your efforts and your amazing writing. Go out and buy it, folks. It's a really useful book. And you know, if you want to know more, read my blog on the website later on. All right, take care. Thanks very much, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all you do. And Open Drama is amazing, just bringing people together and bringing drama teachers together. It's a beautiful thing. So, thank you.